You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, today is 2/2/2022, which is quite a string of twos, if you ask me. If you add them up all together, it comes out to the number one. If you're a numerologist, please send me an email. Explain to me what that means, because I don't know. And the email address is kl@carrielutz.com. Lobo Tigre is with us now. It's great to have you back on. So congratulations, champagne. We should be breaking out the champagne bottles. We just exceeded $30 trillion in funny money debt.
That's what I was thinking when you said what 222 adds up to. Well, this morning, the news is $30 trillion in debt. Now, you know, it's a national disgrace, not just a national debt, but it's been ignored by the mainstream for so long. It's kind of amusing to see the headlines, but you know what? I don't think this is going to change anything. I don't think the powers that be think it matters. Until it does matter, it won't matter. But it is an eye opener, and the real eye opener isn't just the number, but how quickly we got there, and the Fed's doubling of its balance sheet. I mean, these are major changes, and everybody says, okay, we had to do it. We're fighting the war against the COVID germ. Fine. Let's even say, okay, all of that was necessary and had to be done. You still have to deal with economic consequences. You still have, you know, massively high levels of debt, which affects interest rates and how high those can be afforded. You know, the money printing, the, you know, all these things that I'm sure your audience is well aware of. These things dwarf what was done after the crash of 2008. They're still working their way through the system. And I think they have both implications for investors and for us in our lives, in our daily lives. We see that when we go to the store.
All right. So inflation, obviously, is one of the hallmarks of the past stimulus program, the attempt to bail out every man, woman, and child in the United States, no matter how undeserving you might be. But these issues are going to continue onward, aren't they?
Well, it's pretty well known, in, at least among serious economists, that monetary and fiscal policy, it takes time to work its way through the system. Even Keynesians will admit that. You know, politicians, you know, no, they can't admit that. But anybody serious knows that it takes time. So the fact that the money, that the stimmy checks have stopped is no reason to think that inflation has peaked already. So they've moved the goalposts. They've done it several times. You know, first it was base effects, right? Then it was the Delta variant, then it was supply chains. And they're still with supply chains. Carrie, I think this is a key point for the audience to take away. You know, Powell says we're going to retire the word transitory. He didn't use it in his last press conference. That's BS. He still believes it. They're still acting based on that. They think that inflation will come down almost on its own, in reverse base effects. And they still believe that the supply chain issues are transitory. They are coming undone. And that means that they don't have to be as aggressive on raising interest rates as much to combat inflation as you would think. You'd say 7% inflation. Why aren't they raising interest rates to 8% to combat 7%? Well, it's because they still believe the transitory lie. Or they're acting as though they believe it. I actually don't know what they really believe. But they're acting as though it really is going to be transitory after all. And they don't have to do that much. They can engineer this soft landing, you know, maybe a little 25 basis point hike in March will do it. But I just don't believe it. And I think the data is starting to show that those of us who did see it coming, despite their, you know, disavowals that nobody could see this coming, and I'm sure your audience would agree with you and me on this. Anybody thought about it, saw it coming, unless you were in the White House or in the Fed. So despite that, the data is starting to show that, you know what, peak inflation hasn't happened yet. I saw a chart last month where the Reuters polled economists, and they had this chart of inflation. It looked like a mountain peak, you know, very sharp peak inflation. It's already here. And this was for the Eurozone. Well, now we just got the Eurozone inflation number out this morning. It's 5.1%. It's up from the peak that was supposed to be in December. So now the peak is going, and they're still saying, oh, it's going to go down now. But you know what? They were wrong before. They were wrong last year. They were wrong the year before that. None of these guys who saw or gals who saw it coming, you know, they haven't changed their tune. So why should anybody listen to them now when they've been so consistently wrong over the relevant timeframes? So this is not conspiracy theory stuff, Carrie. This is just looking at the data. We, the outsiders, are actually the data dependent ones here, not the powers that be.
Yeah, well, they're just into hopium here, right? I mean, let's face it. There's just no way that there can't be inflation. If you know anything about monetary policy, quantity theory of money, all these things, once they started printing out the stimmy checks, the rebates, the refunds, the tax refunds, the earned income or the unearned income tax credit, because they don't earn it, all these things. And then the, not to mention the corporate welfare that took place, all of these things, the small business, PPP loans, all of this, you know, tens of trillions of dollars. They said 6 trillion, I'm convinced it's a lot higher. And then rates go to zero and the Fed's just giving money out. We don't even know how much money they gave to to foreign banks. If you remember last time, they gave foreign banks like $6 or $8 trillion just to keep the party going. We haven't heard about it yet, but I venture to say it's many times more that, Lobo. More than that, Lobo.
I would agree. And another number that you didn't bring up that I think is really, you know, it's an eye-opening record worth putting in here is also the trade deficit. Like if you remember, I remember when Bill Clinton used to run around saying, oh, it's not my fault. It's the deficit made me do it, right? And it was, there were the twin deficits, the budget deficit and the trade deficit. And this caused him, a Democrat, to roll back promises on social spending and things because, you know, these two horrible deficits were such a huge threat for the country. We're not talking prehistoric times or 18th century capitalism that's no longer relevant, which isn't true. This is recent history. And the deficits made us do it. Well, you know what? We've got deficits that are, you know, horrifically worse, you know, off the charts worse, both of them. $1 trillion trade deficit. I mean, that is so beyond the pale, Carrie. And but the response now is that's fine. We can have multi-$1 trillion budget deficits, $1 trillion trade deficits, and there's no problem. We can handle inflation. There's nothing wrong here. These are not the droids you're looking for. Move along.
Hey, remember the Vietnam War, and we were sold the myth that we could have guns and butter. And that's kind of what they're doing now, Lobo, is guns and butter. We can have money creation where anything you want, you can have without any inflation. Something has to give here, right?
I quite agree. And so the rub comes is, okay, so when and how much? You know, I think it's more useful to say that economics and the history of economics and actually thousands of years of monetary debasement history tells us that the ramifications of what's been done already are not done, and they will continue to work their way through the economy for years to come. Milton Friedman famously said that monetary policy typically had about an 18-month delay. And so the monetary policy, the great tapering, which hasn't even ended yet, like the Fed is still actually easing monetary conditions right now as you and I speak, in the face of 7% inflation. So that hasn't even ended yet. And according to history, according to Friedman, at least, we can expect 18 months of delay. And then that's not even to mention the stimmy checks and the impact of that, which I don't think Friedman even contemplated. So that's just the base level, which says higher inflation ahead. And with all the weakening that we're seeing, we just have a jobs report out, the private report out. It was a negative 300,000 instead of a plus 200,000. Huge miss. So we have inflation and we have economic weakness. What's that? Stagflation. What happened the last time we had stagflation? You know, we know what happened to the gold price. So I think things that many hard money advocates and free marketeers and people who understand monetary history have been saying for a long time, I think they're going to see You know, they're going to have their day in the sun, Carrie. We're going to be able to say, if you want, see, I told you so. I think more important than doing that is investing accordingly and benefiting from the change. Yes. But I think we will have our day.
Great point. You know, we're already telling people, I told you so, because you and I both knew to a certainty exactly what was going to happen, happened. And if you believe John Williams' shadow stats, 14, 15% inflation, in some ways it could be more when you look at energy prices, throw in some inflation, and then throw in a little geopolitical instability, and we're close to $100 a barrel oil again. And every commodity that you look at has either made records or is going to make records in the not too distant future. And that will be the ultimate vindication, as if we needed it, because we really didn't need vindication here, Lobo, because this is like night follows day. So wanted to talk a little bit about the trucker protest without getting into the vagaries of the health issues behind it. It looks like the boiling frog has jumped out of the pot.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And let's just stipulate from what, let's set the medical issue aside. Let's say the truckers are all completely wrong. I'm not saying that, but let's just.
Of course.
The fact that they're doing it, the fact that they're protesting, the fact that a large number of people in a well-funded protest is getting together to say no to Big Brother, I think that's very significant. I'm very pleased to see people having the spine to say no to Big Brother. And we've seen similar things in the U.S. too, where I didn't think there would be as much pushback against the powers that be telling people you will do this, you will obey that, you know, it's for the common good. It just seemed like, honestly, since September 11, people, despite that being a colossal failure of the state and a core function, people just pivoted and their attitudes became anybody in a uniform with a hat is should be admired, and what the people on top say is important because we got to pull together. It's like this tribal response to this attack, and we gotta pull together and obey and go along. And ever since, and I think that's unfortunate. I'm a libertarian. I believe in independent thought. That's why I'm an independent speculator. And just to see everybody knuckle under and go along with the authorities disturbs me. So whether they're right or wrong on their protests, these truckers, I'm encouraged to see that they're standing up for what they think and acting independently. There's hope left. There's some spine left in the Americas.
Well, we can hope. You know what I'm also impressed a lot by, Lobo, is the fact that the Mounties up north in Canada have backed off. All right, the authoritarian instincts throughout the entire health disaster that's taken place here have strictly adhered to the state's line, right? Their tools of enforcement, police forces. Now the truckers have refused to back off, and they saw that they weren't backing off, and they said they're going to tow, they're going to break the blockade, all this stuff. You know what they did? They turned around, they hightailed, and they left. That, to me, was also a shocker because, you know, look, in military organizations, you don't get promoted by not following orders. You get kicked out. So, and police, Mounties, whatever, they're paramilitary organizations. Many of their members have been members of the armed forces. So to see them hightail it and leave, just said, we're not doing this. We're not hanging out here in sub-zero weather, getting frostbite to enforce some policy that we don't agree in. That was a big shock to me as well.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Doré Copper Mining is a premier, near-term, high-grade copper and gold redevelopment opportunity with tremendous exploration potential only 14 kilometers from the town of Chibougamau in mine-friendly Quebec. Doré Copper is debt-free and owns a 2,700-ton-per-day mill with an 8-million-ton tailings facility ready to be used. There is already power to site, and it is accessible by paved highway and rail. Doré Copper aims to produce a profitable hub-and-spoke operation of over 100,000 gold-equivalent ounces per year, or over 60 million billion pounds of copper equivalent by 2024. Because of the existing infrastructure and location, a low capex is anticipated to recommence production. Doré Copper trades under DCMC in Toronto and under DRCMF on the OTC. To learn more, go to dorecopper.com. That's dorecopper.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah. And again, the medical issue isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people saying no to governments overreaching. Did the CDC in the US really have the authority to regulate behavior on airplanes the way they did? Where does it say that in the law? Where does it say that in the Constitution that an agency, an unelected official in an agency like that can have that power? I just don't see that. And medical issue aside, I think it's great when people stand up and say, you know, where does it say this in the Constitution? What are my rights here? I want to stand up for my rights. And I think that's an encouraging thing that there is still some spine left, like I say. Actually, your story reminds me of, I don't know if you remember the Gandhi movie that was made some decades ago. There's a scene where they go to protest the injustice of the salt laws, and the jackbooted thugs stand there with their sticks and the poor people come up and they're unarmed. They peacefully present themselves to the gate and the bad guys beat them with their sticks. And they just keep coming and they get up and they go back in the line and come. And after a while, you can just see the injustice of it. And the jackbooted thugs in the sand, they wince, like they know they're the ones in the wrong. So yeah, interesting times, Gary.
Yeah, that was the biggest shock to me, because I just figured nobody's risking their pensions, nobody's risking lifetime free health care just because the demonstrators might be right or they might agree with them. And now they're turning their backs. And hey, it made me optimistic for the first time in a long time, because if people put up with, limitations, restrictions, or doing away with their liberties, with your freedoms, then there's no hope. Everybody's just going to go along with whatever the next thing they come up with.
It's the crisis in Leviathan thesis. Every crisis expands the scope and power of Leviathan. As a person who doesn't want to live in a totalitarian state, I'm encouraged to see even a little piece of that chipped away.
Hey, and truckers, let's look at their economic status in the country. It used to be in the U.S., truckers were unionized, Teamsters, intercity, long haul truckers were all unionized. They made above average pay, and somehow they converted to owner operators over time. Even the big trucking companies, they're all independent contractors. So none of the union rules apply to them anymore. They're looked down upon in society. Think of truck drivers often as serial killers, right? You have all these awful visions of them, but they're essential. If there's ever essential workers that exist, it's the truckers, because whether your stuff's going by rail, ship, or whatever, the last mile to your doorstep, it's going on a truck. And to see that that these people are getting some recognition for what they do and their importance kind of makes me hopeful, but let's not celebrate too quickly. So Lobo, yeah, you mentioned profiting from inflation. Will Rogers, I always cite this quote of his. He said, this was in the 20s, invest in inflation, it's the only thing going up, right? So from the standpoint of your investments, of what you can do with your life, invest in things that benefit from inflation rather than get hurt by it, right? Isn't that that simple?
Well, yes. And the simplest form of saying it, I specialize on metals and mining, and that's what I do, but really anything real, anything governments can't print, and that can be real estate and be the house you live in or commercial, or but not just that, it can be commodities, it can be anything real, tangible, of actual use and value that nobody can print, that should do well over the years ahead, not just months ahead. Actually, I would even turn it around and say in the months ahead, there's a lot of uncertainty. If the powers that be lose control of the situation, we could see a train wreck, we could see a market crash, So even real things that are necessary, like copper, could go into reverse if there's a major disruption, kerfuffle there. So in the near term, some question marks there. But going forward in this inflationary environment, and by the way, if there is a market crash or an economic reversal, I'm absolutely convinced that the response from the powers that be will be to reopen the money floodgates. So if that happens, that would be transitory, and it would result in even higher inflation going ahead after that. So I would see that as a buying opportunity. The thing that I'm most willing to buy right now is actually gold and silver stocks, because I think if there is crash and fear, you can have safe haven asset value driving them up. I think inflation is stickier than the powers that be will admit. You know, I talked about that peak inflation chart is now broken already. If that continues to break, I think gold and silver do well and the stocks do even better. I guess maybe I should make a side note that gold and silver themselves, bullion, I don't see as a speculation. In my view, that's savings. And I sock that away for the long term. And I do recommend, I'm not really a recommender, but I do think that it's prudent for everybody to have some savings in hard assets that can't be printed away. As Doug Casey, my friend, likes to say, it's the only financial asset that you can be long and there's no simultaneous short. There's no counterparty risk. I think that's very important. But I'm saying is that for the near term, I'm willing to buy gold and silver stocks because they could take off. And if they don't, I'd be happy to buy more. If there's a crash, I'd be happy to buy more. I'm holding off on industrial metals like copper and some of the others until we see how the economic chips land. The one different one out there is uranium, which you just talked, Carrie, about how all these commodities prices are up. Uranium is the odd man out, where even though it has been actually in an upward trend, volatile upward trend for 5 years, it's still below the average cost of production right now. Unlike, say, copper, which is near record high prices, or tin, zinc, a lot of these things are very high priced on a historical comparison basis. Uranium is still below the cost of production. That makes it different. It makes the risk reward asymmetrical, assuming, of course, there's no major nuclear accident. You know, set that aside. As a commodity, you look at it, mine supply has been in deficit for years. The excess secondary supply was visibly hoovered up last year by the new entrants brought in, some of the other players buying uranium off the spot market. And so now you've got supply and deficit disruption. You've got demand continue to grow. China's building 150 plants and other countries are building more. So in my view, you've got the technicals, the global macro, the fundamentals in the industry. This is an industry that is actually still in liquidation as an overall industry, and something that's necessary, cannot be replaced in less than decades. It's hard to find a setup better than that. Doesn't mean that, you know, if there's a big market crash, that uranium stocks won't go down as well. Of course they will. Everything gets whacked in a crash. But absent a major nuclear incident, I think the trend for uranium is one of the most solid trends in the commodity space. And the last stock I bought was uranium stock. I'm looking to rebuild my shopping list, and uranium is definitely front and center there.
Couldn't agree more. Just things like buying cars, all right? The supply chain, we didn't even talk about that, but just to buying a used car, the car that I just purchased, I locked it in without getting into details. The manufacturer is now selling that car for $15,000 more than I paid, and you can't get it. So there's opportunities here. And if you just assume, if you can lock in a future vehicle right around this car, 6-8 months till your new one comes in, you could sell it off more than you paid, and you're golden. And that's just one.
What a world. That's something real too. I've heard that there's people who, you know, it used to be that a lease was kind of looked down on, a car lease, because you didn't own the car at the end of the lease. You had to sell it back, or you had to watch your mileage and all that. And you just buy the car, you're better off. But now in this high inflation world, in this supply chain disrupted world, people with leases, they have the right to buy the car for a certain price. They can do that, turn around and sell it on the used car market for, as you say, 15, 20, whatever, you know, depending on the car. They can make instant money because it's a real asset.
Yeah, but finding another car. But assuming you can do that, assuming you can find another car, then that's just one example. I mean, women's handbags, anything collectible, They've gone up in value to the point where they're selling more used than they did new, these designer handbags. You can find stuff in the stores. It's called retail arbitrage, where you can buy it cheaper in the store and sell it for more on eBay or Poshmark than you paid for it. So, and that's just an example, like you said, anything that isn't ethereal, anything that has a physical representation, presence in our consciousness, potentially could be sold for more. I mean, I'm selling stuff just when I upgrade things, computers, getting almost as much as I paid for it, where literally I used to look at it, you know, buy a computer, like buy Apples because there's a secondary market in them. I sell it 2 years later, I get 2/3 back. So I've basically rented it for a couple $100 a year. And now those items, you could be making a profit on it.
Yeah, it's really quite extraordinary. And the scary part of this is that, of course, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. So they're talking about price controls. And if you think that can't happen here, remember Gerald Ford, a Republican, put price controls in the last time we had, you know. don't think it can't happen. This is a big deal. It's a serious deal. I had an experience once when you have official prices and you have real value or perceived value. I remember being in the Republic of Belarus when they were experiencing very high inflation before they chopped a bunch of zeros off their rubles. And you would go to a bank to exchange dollars. As a person with like physical paper dollars in my hand, I'd go to an exchange place and there was always two lines. And the moment somebody came up with the actual dollars in their hand to the counter, somebody else would come up with rubles and say, "I'll give you a better price than the official price." So
yeah, Argentina.
This is the visible reality of what happens when you try to put price controls on things. When you say by fiat, oh no, the price of gasoline is going to be 50 cents a gallon instead of whatever it is, you know, you create scarcity, you create a black market, you create all these distortions. It is sadly, I think, something the audience, Financial Survival Network, you know, think about these things going forward.
Yeah. Hey, and I believe that we've already got price controls. I think when you look at the activity of certain commodities, when they hit their peak, right away they get taken down. Now, it's a very inefficient way of controlling prices, manipulating commodities markets, but we know that certain commodities are manipulated. It happens. You know, like somebody told me they made a fortune because their home came with like a 2,000 gallon tank of oil. And basically it was included and it had to be filled up. And effectively, it was worth $8,000, you know? So in any event, Lobo, just tell us where we find you. How do we subscribe to your site?
Sure. Well, independentspeculator.com. It's simple to remember. And rather than try to twist anybody's arm and promise, oh, subscribe now by midnight, I'll do that. I'll just encourage people to sign up for the free weekly letter. You get one email per week instead of bombarded with spammy advertisements all over the place. And you can see what I write about. You can see how I think about these issues and then decide whether you want to do business with me.
All right. Excellent. And there's a link to that in the show notes on Financial Survival Network. If you've got a question for Lobo, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com, or sign up for your free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Lobo, always a pleasure. Always interesting to hear your latest ideas on things. Happen to be in full agreement with you. We'll just have to wait for this thing to unfold.
We live in interesting times.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.